Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com. That's abilitychiro.com.
You're listening ad-free on Wondery Plus. It's early in the morning of October 17, 1945. Union leader Cipriano Reyes makes his way through the quiet streets of a Buenos Aires suburb. As one of the country's main supporters of workers' rights, he's happy to see the factories and workshops he passes are closed thanks to a series of ongoing strikes. But today, the workers aren't just staying home. As Cipriano moves further toward the city center, he begins to see a mass of people marching toward the Capitol. After days of union-led strikes, this appears to be a culmination of civil unrest, and it's being led because of one man. As Cipriano joins the crowd, he hears the name of former Vice President General Juan Domingo Perón being chanted over and over again. Since his days as the head of the Labor Department, Perón has fought for workers' rights and built himself a small army of followers along the way. But just a few days ago, Perón was arrested in a preemptive move by the Argentine government, who fear he's becoming a little too popular. Now the masses have come out to advocate for Perón's release. Up ahead, Cipriano sees police gathering near a giant bridge, one that separates the workers in the suburbs from the government buildings in the city. Cipriano crosses to the other side just moments before officers issue orders to raise the bridge. He looks back and sees that the police's attempts to stop the march have failed. Despite the river being an outlet for all the city's sewer waste, the workers are determined to cross. Some climb aboard makeshift rafts and row to the other side. Others simply wade through the filthy water. Cipriano continues to follow the crowd as they edge closer to the city. The transport system, already struggling under the weight of the strikes, has completely buckled under the pressure of thousands descending upon the Capitol. Cipriano follows the crowd as they edge closer to the city, weaving through the traffic-filled streets until the 20,000 disgruntled marchers make it to the city's main square. There they are joined by thousands more, until their numbers swell to over 100,000, all of them stomping their feet and chanting for Perón's release. With each spirited cheer and anguished exclamation, Cipriano recognizes that the mood of an entire country now rests on a knife's edge. Over the next few days, Argentina will change forever. Amid growing unrest, the country's president will have to make a decision between releasing Juan Domingo Perón or feeling the wrath of an entire populace. His decision and the events that follow will forever alter the lives of Argentines and catalyze the rise of a political movement galvanized by the Workers' March on October 17, 1945. From Noiser and Airship, I'm Lindsey Graham, and this is History Daily. History is made every day. On this podcast, every day, we tell the true stories of the people and events that shaped our world. Today is October 17th, 1945, the rise of President Perón. It's January 15th, 1944, in the province of San Juan in Argentina, almost 2 years before Juan Domingo Perón will be ousted from power. As he walks the street, Perón is dismayed by the devastation all around him. Now the Minister of Labor and Argentina's military government, Perón is here to survey the damage done by the worst natural disaster to ever hit Argentina, an earthquake that has claimed over 10,000 lives. In front of him are once grand buildings reduced to rubble, once happy families brought to desperation and tears over lost loved ones. Perón also sees the infrastructure around him is gone. The roads and telephone lines are all destroyed. He assesses the damage, and in it sees an opportunity. Just 6 months earlier, Perón was part of a military coup that helped unseat the unpopular and corrupt former government. Known as the Revolution of 43, the coup saw what many hoped was an end to turbulent times in Argentina. And for his role in the victory, Perón was given the post of Minister of Labor. But the regime change hasn't been the success many hoped for. The new military government faces its own problems, and corruption and cronyism continues. But Perón hopes the tragedy of the San Juan earthquake will become a uniting moment for the country. While at ground zero of the disaster, Perón recognizes that money must be raised quickly to rebuild the city. And though his position of labor minister has traditionally come with little power, Perón is able to leverage his title and connections to call a meeting of all heads of sectors, from banking to sports to the arts. Something of a theatrical persona, Perón also enjoys his links to the Argentine film and radio industries and is soon hosting fundraising events, asking for ideas from those gathered on how to raise enough money to get San Juan back on its feet. During these fundraising sessions, Perón, widowed from his first wife for more than 5 years, meets a young radio star by the name of Eva Duarte. The general is immediately impressed with this bright-eyed, passionate woman, one who argues against his idea to fundraise through festivals. Eva's idea is to go directly to the rich instead, to ask those who have money and get them to pay to rebuild. Taken in by her enthusiasm, Perón gives Eva partial responsibility for the fundraising efforts, and the two quickly begin both a professional and personal relationship. This partnership, though, is not looked upon kindly by many within the government, who see Eva as a commoner, exerting far too much control over both Perón and his policies. But few can argue that the fundraising appeal for the earthquake is anything other than a monumental success. And as Perón's popularity increases, he becomes less and less concerned with what those in power think of him. Instead, he turns his attention to getting the people on his side. So while the earthquake relief effort continues, Perón is also hard at work cementing his position as Minister of Labor. Knowing there's power in the nation's unions, he decides that rather than battle them, as many have done over the previous decades, he would support them, but only if they pledge their political allegiance to him. Many agree, and a symbiotic relationship quickly forms in which Perón gives the workers increased rights and better pay. They in turn help him establish pro-Perón unions. Over the following months, Perón's star continues to rise. In the same year as the San Juan earthquake, Perón's promoted to the vice presidency. His front-facing work on the earthquake relief project, alongside his continued support for unions, makes Perón's name synonymous with helping the underdogs and working for the workers of Argentina. And as he continues to step out with Eva Duarte, he will become even more popular with the people, who see Eva as one of their own, and the two together as a power couple. But Perón's immense popularity will become something of a problem for the current president, Edelmiro Farrell. Increasingly, Farrell will see Perón as a threat that needs to be dealt with so he won't lose his own position. But Farrell's attempt to put out Perón's flame will backfire, leading to one of the biggest demonstrations Buenos Aires has ever witnessed. It's October 17, 1945, almost 2 years after the San Juan earthquake catapulted Juan Domingo Perón to new political heights. Perón shakes his head, marveling at the miraculous turn of events in his fortune. Over just the past 7 days, Perón has gone from vice president to prisoner to hero of the people. It's almost too much for him to comprehend. A week ago, Perón was ousted from his position of power. Sensing his vice president was something of a loose cannon, President Edelmiro Farrell ordered Perón to give up both his political ambitions and military positions. At first, Perón refused. But then the president informed Perón that unless he wrote out his resignation with immediate effect, the army would march on the city and put an end to the government. Perón had no choice but to accept the terms before him. In a rousing speech to workers announcing his dismissal, Perón promised that their pay would not only increase, but be linked to inflation. These were two policies that did not come from the government, but Perón wanted the workers to know he was on their side no matter what. When word of these policies reached the president, he decided the only option for the renegade Perón was prison. But now, less than 7 days after his arrest, Juan Domingo Perón holds all the cards. The masses have come to his defense. Peron has been informed that the series of recent strikes throughout Buenos Aires have culminated in a massive workers' march, and Peron's dismissal is driving the demonstration. The protesters say they will not stop until Peron is free, and soon Eduardo Colom, a newspaper editor sympathetic to Peron and his politics, arrives to tell Peron that he's come directly from the city center, where he's seen firsthand the hundreds of thousands of supporters in the capital, all demanding his release. He asks Peron to try to come with him, to tell the crowd he's safe, but Peron refuses. He's more than happy to wait to see how this all plays out. No one knows what kind of chaos the country will be thrown into if Peron is not released, so President Farrell does the only thing he can. He sends word that he will do whatever Peron wants, and in response, Peron demands that he be released, that new elections be held next year, and that upon his return to the government, he is able to select his own cabinet. With the mass uprising of workers all on Peron's side, Farrell has no option but to acquiesce. Satisfied, Peron dons his old uniform and agrees to meet the crowd. At 10:30 in the evening, on the balcony of the presidential palace, the crowd finally sees the man they've been waiting for. Peron steps out to monumental applause and a chorus of the national anthem. He knows the crowd will need unity to calm down, so despite having recently been put in jail by him, Peron openly embraces President Farrell. Then, in front of over 200,000 people, Peron begins his speech. He lets loose with emotive, passionate words about forgiveness and fraternity. He's coy about where he's been and the details surrounding his arrest for fear of stoking the crowd. But he announces that he is indeed ready to serve the great mass of Argentina. The crowd erupts into more applause. During Peron's speech, he also invokes the term descamisados, meaning shirtless ones. A once derogatory term for the working classes, Peron is now claiming it as their own, declaring that he would be a champion for those who need help the most. He ends his speech by telling the masses that tomorrow is for celebrating, that the only people who should go to work are the bosses. Then Peron leaves and returns to his home where his partner Eva Duarte waits for him. The mythology surrounding the events of October 17th will see the true birth of Peronism, a nationalist political ideology that rejects both communism and capitalism. Taking a staunch anti-U.S. viewpoint, Peron will champion social justice, economic independence, and political sovereignty. This platform will afford Peron the chance to ride a populist wave to the highest position of government. Less than 6 months after his imprisonment, Peron will begin his first term as president of Argentina. By his side all throughout the campaigning will be Eva Duarte. Evita, as she will call herself, will become as much of a figurehead for the workers and women of Argentina as the man she will soon marry. And together, Juan and Evita will shape Argentina and its politics for decades to come. It's June 4, 1946, at the Argentine Presidential Palace in Buenos Aires. At the head of a banquet table, Eva Peron entertains those around her who have just witnessed the inauguration of her husband, Juan Domingo Peron. She wines and dines those in attendance, enjoying her new role. By virtue of being President Peron's wife, Eva has just become First Lady of Argentina. Her rise from unknown actress to radio star to now a position of great political influence is meteoric. Having campaigned alongside Juan, Eva knows she's played a large part in the election of her husband. Now, as she sits among the most notable members of Argentine society, she's eager to keep playing her part in shaping the country. In the months since October 17th, a mythic status has engulfed Eva, spread throughout Buenos Aires and beyond. These tales have been spun in no small part by her husband. In many retellings of the events of October 17th, Eva is almost single-handedly responsible for rallying the workers to come to Peron's defense through nonviolent protest. And with this legend in place, Eva begins the promotion of Peronism. She's primed to fight for the causes she believes in, including social justice and voting rights for women. After a tour of Europe, meeting dignitaries and politicians, she returns to South America and starts work on the Eva Peron Foundation. With Eva at the helm, this charitable organization expands to soon employ tens of thousands of workers and boasts hundreds of millions of dollars in funds. Meanwhile, Juan Peron begins work on his 5-year plan. He calls for huge infrastructure changes to transportation, communication, and energy. He also advocates for workers' rights, setting a goal to close class divisions with increased wages for workers and full employment. These actions make him a divisive figure, though, hated by the country's large employers, but loved by the people. With a post-war economy booming, Argentina becomes a major global player, and Peronism grows stronger than ever. But in 1952, tragedy strikes. Eva Perón passes prematurely at the age of just 33. The Argentine working class see it as a loss of their greatest ally. 3 years later, Peronism faces yet another challenge. Vulnerable and still mourning his wife's death, a military coup in 1955 sees Juan Perón forced to live in exile in Spain. His name and that of his wife will be ruined by the government, and support for his return and his political causes will be outlawed. But 18 years later, Perón will fly back to his beloved home country and be declared president once again after a stand-in candidate wins on a pro-Perón ticket. But this second reign will last less than a year. In 1974, Perón will pass away in office at the age of 78. Still, Perón's name and the legacy he and his wife gave to Argentina will echo well into the 21st century. Loved by some and hated by others, Peronism will survive in many different forms in Argentine politics, almost 8 decades after Argentina's working class rallied around Perón on October 17, 1945. Next on History Daily, October 18, 1867. The United States takes possession of Alaska after purchasing the territory from Russia for 2 cents an acre. From Noiser and Airship, this is History Daily, hosted, edited, and executive produced by me, Lindsey Graham. Audio editing by Mohammed Shazib. Sound design by Misha Stanton. Music by Lindsey Graham. This episode is written and researched by Owen Paul Nichols. Executive producers are Alexandra Curry Buckner for Airship and Pascal Hughes for Noiser.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com. That's abilitychiro.com.